Good morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Surgeon. I'll be with you for about 55 minutes today. As we've been trying to do all week, it is a way of us, of me in the school system, opening the doors to let you see what's going on. And we did this about 6 months ago, and the feedback was phenomenal. I couldn't believe people who, citizens, who really, they think it's their father. Like when I went to school, and before you ask, no, Methuselah was not in my class, either was Socrates. But it's changed, and what they do in this system really needs to be heralded. And I know, going back to Jennifer, when she was in charge of this, Jennifer Stokes, assistant superintendent, and Matthew Bishop, assistant superintendent, and me, custodian, but of the records. They were astonished, Jennifer, at the number of people that were classified as special ed. And they had a real misconception too, but so there were a lot of things that come out. A lot of people didn't realize we have the shops that we have now. Didn't realize George had got this Toyota thing. So it's kind of a good way to let people see, open the doors, let people see what's going on. And these two folks, God love them, they got their plates are full. Let's just put it this way. So Matt, we'll start with you. You're still the principal at Taconic?
No.
Just in.
Technically, I'm the in July, I left that to come into this role, which is the interim, but the assistant superintendent for instruction, assessment, and educational engagement.
Okay. And Jen, you're now the assistant superintendent, and it's, give me the title because I'm 77 years old. I forget where I parked the car.
Good morning. I'm the Assistant Superintendent for Transformation and Accountability.
God bless. Just so that I can say things without getting us all fired, the views and opinions expressed on this program are mine and those of my guests. They in no way represent the Pittsfield School Department, School Committee, Peter Marchetti in the Mayor's Office, Peter White, and in the city council, and or the person trying to get on the bike lane in front of Maplewood Avenue. The traffic light will work for you. We'll start with you, Jen. What an enormous response, both of you. To get the schools out of some classification that they're in, some of the schools.
Right. So I work with six schools that are classified by the state as in turnaround status, meaning they're underperforming schools. So I work with Taconic, Reed, Herberg, Conti Morningside, and Crosby.
Okay. And when they say, I'm sorry, I lived in a bureaucracy for a long time, and we always were astonished that the bureaucrats in D.C. were trying to tell us on the field what was going on from their perspective. And I wonder, when we say underperforming, just to make a comment, I got very kind of upset. There was a thing of our opinion in the Eagle about, now that the school's has a plan, blah, blah, blah. And I forget the exact wording. I'm paraphrasing. We're going to hold them accountable for the education of our children. And I'm not an educator, but I would say this. There's a lot more people involved in the education of a child than just the teachers and the administration. And I think somewhere that's getting lost in the fog of whatever. So, and you please disagree with me if you want. It's certainly your prerogative. But I think when we talk about attendance, that's a parental thing. My uncle Jim McNeese was the truant officer here for years. We only skipped school once and got caught. So there you go.
Yeah, attendance is a big factor. You know, and we're still doing catch up from COVID, and you know, there, as you said, there are a lot of other factors that go into a student's education.
And Matt, you're in the curriculum piece and all that. What did you think about the vote of MCAS? I guess that's a pretty good question.
We knew that. Was
yeah,
that
we knew that one was going to come. That's it's certainly a flashpoint, right? It's a hard, it's a nuanced question, because I think it's not as simple as great. Yeah. There's more MCAS. There's a lot to it, right? So the department actually came out with a little bit of guidance yesterday, and even though this the Commonwealth, the citizens of the Commonwealth voted pretty resoundingly that this was not the MCAS as a graduation requirement was not something they wanted,
right,
doesn't take away the fact that the state is by law requires every high schooler to have a what they call a competency determination, a CD, right? So not like the old listen to your music CDs, but and that's what they're going to have to define. That's like, so what is the state going to now use to determine if a student can graduate? Is it a series of courses? Is it a portfolio? Is it, there's all these sort of unknowns around this. So it's really kind of an interesting time, but I think people don't understand that even though the state was using the MCAS as the competency determination, but now we have to replace it with something else. And what is that something else? Is it an assessment? Is it a portfolio? Is it a series of courses you have to pass? Like, so it doesn't take away the requirement of meeting certain requirements to graduate. It just takes away this particular test. And then there's the whole federal piece to this where, you know, they're, because we receive federal funds, their requirement is we have competency determinations and assess and rate and grade schools. So there's a lot to this.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not as easy. It's so great. No more MCAS. We can all go on our way. There's a lot of unknowns.
Yeah. And I think too, that you're right. In the bigger picture, it's one of the, excuse me, one of the components that could be part of graduation. But there's a lot more, what should we say, discussions to be had to come up with a better solution or something. Jen, going back, when they say underperforming, because that's been a buzzword for a while now, especially about the people who you know, never been in, well, they were in a school building, they got out 50 years ago, 60, and they don't understand there's a difference today in today's children. And let me just throw this in, because you both were so involved with it. Peers, my peers, now I'm in my late 70s. What's the big deal with the cell phones? Just tell them they can't use a damn cell phone at school. It's not that way anymore, dude. I can remember at North Junior High, Reed, somebody wore engineer boots. Now, you may not even know what they are, but they're like big, heavy-duty motorcycle, but they sent them home. So what do you think? What are the issues?
Want to talk? Dr. Bishop can talk about the cell phone policy.
Well, cell phone is that.
Oh, I know. I watched them. I watched those meetings. I do too. Yeah.
Well, text me if I'm screwing up ever and tell you.
No, you no. I here's what I will say. Here's what I will say about you and so many other of your colleagues. You have the patience of a saint. That's all. Leave it at that.
So it's really fascinating, right? I think, you know, there, I think the tension in this question is, you know, to what extent are we preparing kids for the real world?
Exactly.
And I think that's the tension around cell phones, right? So I think they are such a distraction. They're such a part of our students and adults. Like, let's not, this isn't just a kid thing.
That's right.
Cell phones have become such a ingrained part of who we are that they've become such a distraction. So I think an easy and a logical response to that is, well, we don't want to see them at all, right? And that's you know, because we got to focus, because we've tried every other, it seems like, approach around, you know, put them away or only when appropriate or blah. And it's just, they're still being a distraction. So I think we're at the point, and you're seeing school districts across the country say the same thing. Like, that just approach isn't working. But then the flip side to the argument is are we teaching responsible use, right? And because that's not the real world, and you know, these can be powerful tools and for productivity or for research or, you know, and so I think that's the tension in this argument. But we're at the point now where we've tried all these other things, and it is becoming such a barrier to learning and distraction, and they're creating such an unhealthy, they can create such an unhealthy culture, you know, when it comes to, you know, social media and what. So I think for now, schools are saying that, you know, we're going to try this because we've tried other things, and some schools are seeing success with it. Our numbers are down currently in terms of referrals. So we're seeing some success with it, but, you know, it's still too early to kind of see the effects of how this is all playing out.
Yeah. And the point is, I'm glad you put it out like that too, Matt. Thanks, Dr. Bishop. Because for the listeners and the viewers, you may think it's an easy thing. You do not have a teenager. You're in your late 70s. For us, making a phone call is a challenge on a cell phone. Never mind. I didn't know, you know, for like 3 years you could take pictures with it. But seriously, before you criticize or you're whatever, and I don't care what your status in life is, whether you're an elected official, get in and get the facts. You know, I'm an old cop, and when we charged them, we had to have the facts. Not what the guy in the bar said or the guy in the coffee shop. Just tell the kid, put it in his pocket. That's fine till the kid takes it out of his pocket. Then what do we do?
Yeah.
And I applaud you, Matt. I watched that whole thing with you.
And we got to remember, too, is that for a period of time, just not that long ago, we've pushed everybody into technology, right? Like, so we've created some type of dependence on this stuff. And now we're saying, okay, put it all away. And it's not that easy. There's a lot of reasons adults and students are attached to their phone. And I do want to take a shout out for a minute for the teachers and the kids and the administrators who are really trying to figure out, you know, how to navigate this in the best way possible, support each other and have the conversations around it. Because the last thing we want to do is be, as Dr. Cameron said one time, draconian about this. We don't want to do that, but it is a problem. Like, there's no doubt about it. It's a problem. And we're trying to work with everybody.
Yeah.
To communicate it's a problem and how to move forward. So the administrators, the teachers, the students who are really battling this with on a daily basis, we really appreciate their efforts and the continued progress we're trying to make on this.
I'm a big person with, I'm not quick to criticize, because I've been in a lot of situations where I was criticized with, and people were working with half facts, no facts, made up facts. And I applaud the teachers and the administrators and you, sir, and all the people who worked on this, because it is not an easy issue. I mean, it's nice to say, just try and put it in their pocket. Well, and what happens when they don't? What are you going to do? Kick them out of school? Just what we need, more kids wandering the streets, you know. So, but thank you for that. And thank you. And please extend to the teachers and the administrators and the kiddos that are trying to play by the game, by the rules of the game. And quick story. The other night we went out to a local restaurant, and there's a family, 3 kids, 2 parents, all of them. Nobody talks anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, Jennifer, you've been tasked with an amazing task. I applaud you for taking it. course, we'll chat afterwards about what you were thinking. But seriously, what do you find the most challenging to deal with? Both of you.
That's a really good question. I think, I don't know, that it's a huge task, as you said.
Yes.
Factors that go into school improvement. I, like Dr. Bishop, would like to applaud the principals and the administration and the teachers in the buildings for working really, really hard. I think that people in the general public don't understand the complexity of teaching. Exactly. That it's not just going in, like you said, when we were in school and felt like it was just done with ease. There's so much planning that goes into teaching. There's so much planning about the social emotional needs of students, about the different educational needs. So you talk of you have students in front of you who are on IEPs. You have students in front of you who are English language learners. You have students in front of you who might not have any English, and you have to teach to a wide range of students. So the complexity of teaching, I don't think teachers are seeing, the profession isn't appreciated. So I think there's that uphill battle.
I agree. And as I tried to make, and I probably didn't do a very good job at it, but I understand. I worked with violent youthful offenders, and I can tell you about 95 plus all had an IEP. And most of their IEPs were based in behavioral. But when you got through it and you ferreted, and I interviewed every one of them, and they had other underlying issues, underlying home issues, underlying personal ability to learn issues, what you would test for special ed. But their behavior always overwhelmed the need, if that makes any sense. So I think people need to understand, again, I know I sound like an old man, as my wife told me yesterday, I am an old man. That hurt. Let us not be so quick to criticize till we understand all the intricacies of the issues that you're facing. What is our local attendance? Is it still kind of rickety, rackety?
Yeah, I mean, one of the metrics we look at pretty regularly is what's called chronic absenteeism.
Yes.
So chronic absenteeism is when you miss 10% or more of a school year. So that's 18 days, right? So 180, 18. So that's 19 or more absences in a year. And the rates for the district and for schools is pretty high. Some schools as high as 40%, 40, 42%. So almost half, right, of the kids, 19 or more school days. And it's interesting, and that goes back to the attendance issue we talked about earlier. And we're doing a lot of like look at ourselves too, and like what message are we sending? Like, here's a simple example that has created a lot of discussion just within the school departments. Like, what is this idea of an excused absence? Like, we're talking about getting rid of that, because you know that's something we're toying with, because that's sending the wrong message, right? Like whether you're out, if you're excused or unexcused, from the state perspective, it doesn't matter. It still counts as an absence. Right. And I think sometimes we send unintentional message that an excused absence is okay.
Right.
As long as I just, as long as I call them in, they're going to be fine. But there's learning. There's learning that's lost. There's things you have to catch up on. And it's not, we want students in school every day that they can possibly be there. And I've had some conversations with parents, with kids, certainly with teachers around this. And I think there is an impression that an excused absence is like everything's okay. And it's not going to affect a kid if they're out, but it does, even if it's for a legitimate reason, because there is things that are moving on without them that they got to catch up on. So something like that is a good example.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent example. In my humble opinion, it is the parent you know, again, we go back to our former vice principal that we were talking there to about prior to the show. He once told me this kid will come in with a bear drip midriff. This is years ago when that, you know. And so, and she came in for the sole purpose of getting sent home. But it wasn't his first rodeo, and you know. So when he called home and got mom to bring a sweatshirt, well, an hour later, she showed up at the school with a sweat, overblouse type thing. So again, a lot, what you're dealing with and what he was dealing with and you guys, it's a change in a lot of philosophy. I know in my experience in the WIOA program, a lot of them didn't see education as important. And that's really a tragedy because my humble opinion, the only way out of the criminal justice system is through education and rehabilitation.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, Bill, because one of the things the district is working on, right, is our trying to create this culture, what we call deep and durable learning, right? So we have this idea. And part of that is helping students understand the relevance, right? Because I agree with you. There are times in my own educational career that I've sat in a classroom and said, why the hell do I have to know this? Like, yeah. Why am I here? I got a million other things that can go on. And then if I had a cell phone at the time, I certainly would have had it out, right? But one of the things we are trying to focus on with all of our educators is really making those connections to their lives and why we're asking them to learn what they're learning and how it's going to impact them. And that kind of like that transcends schools, grade levels, you know. And I think that's something when we focus on will help combat that. It's a piece of that puzzle. I mean, it's not the answer, but it's a piece that because we realize that there's more we can do with that. And I think that's been pretty successful. When we do that, I think it does help with the buy-in with the students.
And there isn't just a silver bullet. I mean, I hope everybody out there listening and viewing this understand. There isn't one answer to a problem that's multifaceted. Just what you're doing I just really want the public to understand there are really capable, wonderful people working at this every day. But you got to do your part too. You know, I mean, if you're a parent, grandparent, I mean, I can tell you visiting time at the YO program, I had more grandparents than I had parents for a lot of reasons. One was one inmate couldn't visit another inmate, and some of them were. And Jen, what is, you don't have to answer it, but what do you see is the most challenging to turn these schools around?
I think the most challenging, and I already said it, is about, and Dr. Bishop talked about it, is that deep, durable learning. Once we get kids to, we really need to hold really high expectations for all of our students. So once we hold these high expectations and students rise to what we expect them to rise to. So I think some of it is we're dealing, like I said, with lots of different, excuse me,
sure.
Lots of different issues with students, but we need to hold our high expectations for every single one that they can succeed and that they can graduate and that they can be successful citizens in our community.
Yeah, yeah. That what composes, I guess, all the issues you will have to address with various students. And I know it'll depend. Some will have a lot of magnitude. I mean, that was my experience. Some came in a disaster and others came in with just a one or two issues that they could be rehabilitated. And when you're talking actually making change, how are you going to evaluate the change?
Well, we're certainly going to evaluate it by our accountability scores. So that's once we come out of status,
yep.
That's measured by a very complicated formula that the state sets down that includes scores on the MCAS test. It includes attendance. It includes growth. Our most needy students growing. They might not pass the MCAS, but they grew a ton last year.
Okay.
So there's a ton of points. So that's how we're going to measure success. But the other way to measure success is, are the students feeling it? We've embraced in our district improvement plan something called a portrait of a graduate this year.
Oh, cool.
And Matt certainly can talk. Matt's leading the charge in that. But what I'm seeing in the schools is that students themselves are owning their education, and they're owning what it means to be a graduate. And Matt can talk to the components of what a portrait of a graduate is, but that's woven throughout our district improvement plan. And it's even in the elementary schools, they've created little characters that embody the portrait of a graduate.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, and again, you're making it real. You know, I've read enough and seen enough theory. You know, I can remember a professor coming into the program saying, well, we start them with zero, and everything that they do right, they gain points. As they gain more points, they less formation structure of the program falls away, and they have more freedom. Oh, the person went bug crazy. Oh, you can't do that. That's a false economy. My God, that'll never work. I said, well, we've been doing it for 2 years. Work pretty good now, you know, because what we learned was they started and always lost. They never had a gain and hold on. I don't know if that makes any sense to educators, but it worked in a prison system.
Yeah.
Go ahead, man. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to really just, I do want to highlight the district's work with Portrait of a Graduate, because it's part of a bigger network. So the Berkshires got together not too long ago through the leadership of Berk 12 and with the sort of support and funding from the Barr Foundation. And they got together, a number of schools got together and tried to decide what skills does a graduate have that graduates from our high schools?
That's excellent.
And so there was some a lengthy process, but the schools that were involved, like I know North Adams was involved, Pittsfield was involved, and I'm forgetting some of the other schools, who was initially part of this. And they collaborated and they came up with six criteria or aspirational goals, if you will.
Okay.
That our Berkshire County graduates will have, right? So it's like they can communicate, they can think critically, they're global citizens, they're prepared, and they're responsible, and they're lifelong learners, right? So like these are the aspirational goals. And now our district is taking those goals, those endpoints, right? And they're trying to look back, we're trying to look at our pre-K through 12 experience, mm-hmm. say, what are we doing along the way to get them to that end goal, right? How are we giving them feedback on how they're doing on those? And what are we, you know, before they graduate,
sure.
How are we letting them know where they stand with that? And I know, Taconic, for instance, in ninth grade, every kid at Taconic takes a course rooted in those competencies, those Portrait of a Graduate competencies. Oh, and then starting next year, they'll have a senior elective course in which they have to demonstrate, they have to have a culminating experience, whatever that looks like, where they demonstrate where they're at with those competencies. So we're trying to tie it through, and like Jenny said, it's even in the elementary schools, they're starting to introduce these. So this is going to become the fabric of our district in the through line, if you will, where we're all working towards these competencies.
And you know, that to me is a solid goal. You know what I mean? It's not some hypothetical wish list or pie in the sky. It's these are obtainable goals, measurable goals, whatever you want to say. We're going to take a break. I'll tell you, folks, I am here. Please stay tuned. I am here today with two people that I have a great deal of respect for. They're both assistant superintendents, too. They got big titles now. But not as big as Tammy Gages, who will be on this week. Her title's on the side of a trailer truck. I don't know what it says. But these two people, Jennifer Stokes and Matt, Dr. Matt Bishop, and I don't do that disrespectfully. They're here, and they've been tasked with some really, really challenging things. And it's, I feel it's our responsibility as citizens to know how hard, one, they're working, how challenging they're being, their jobs are in today's society. Not when we were in school, or your dad was in school, or your kid was. My kid's going to be 50. So it's a lot different now. So we'll be right back. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial. We are simulcasting on PCTV channel 1301. I know some of you don't like this, but I have to do it. This is my flag. I have friends buried underneath it. I have acquaintances buried underneath it. And a lot of people, some of you young, some of you old, sign their name on a dotted line at some point in their life to die for this flag. Now, I understand the election and all that. I don't, all I'm asking you to do is don't disrespect it. Don't disrespect it. And I know you can continue to text me, don't care. I'm right here. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Whoa, like what exactly is happening here?
89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal, opportunity grows here, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
Underwriters are so important for keeping this station alive. Hi, this is Sean Sayre, Executive Director of PCTV. I'd like to thank our local businesses for supporting Pittsfield Community Radio and for believing in the mission of the station. When you hear underwriting messages on the air, you know those companies support WTBR-FM. If you're listening now and your business would like to join in and support us, call me today at 445-4234 and get involved, or visit us at WTBRFM.com. It will make all the difference.
Let's take a moment to talk about your wellness. Financial wellness, that is.
Go through the process of making a monthly budget, even if it's not perfect. It's good to be aware of your financial health.
When shopping for insurance, ask your agent to shop around for you and see if you can bundle your policies.
This money hack brought to you by your neighbors at Greylock Federal Credit Union. All financial education and coaching resources are free and open to the public. Greylock Federal Credit Union, insured by NCUA.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Okay, we are back. I am here today, and I'm honored and privileged to have with these people because I have the utmost respect for them. And I mean that from my heart and from my brain, what's left of it. Dr. Matt Bishop and Jennifer Stokes, they are both assistant superintendents. And Matt will tell you what he is assistant superintendent of. And Jennifer will tell you what she's assistant superintendent of. So, Jennifer, ladies first. Chivalry's not dead. It's just old, fat, and bald.
My long title is I'm the assistant superintendent of transformation and accountability.
And Matt, doctor?
Assistant superintendent of instruction, assessment, and educational engagement.
And just 30-second over or 30-foot overview, what does that mean, Dr. Bishop?
Basically, there's a lot to it. 30 seconds, I'm not sure is enough, but I'll do my best. It's a lot to do sort of with the operational side, but in the classroom, it deals with, you know, instructional practices and curriculum.
Okay. Yeah. And in that, just a bit of history, the Polish princess, my wife, who had over 40 something years of teaching, taught at West Side Community School when it first opened, and it was the cutting edge. And now we're looking to kind of do open classrooms really didn't work out, I guess, from what I'm understanding. So part of Matt's job is to tie everything together.
Yeah, and I think, you know, working with Jenny, Jenny's working very closely with schools to determine, you know, do they have what they need?
Right.
you know, and is it working? And the, you know, and when, and if working with the principals and the teachers, and if they don't, then we work together to see how we can get them what they need. You know, so I think it's really kind of a unique position. And just on the curriculum side, like we're starting to really look at what we have, and we have some really good resources in Pittsfield. I think we have, you know, I think we, there'd be a lot of teachers in other districts who would look for the support that we have in terms of curriculum. Yeah. And I think the one of the highlights that I've had so far in this role has been really helping administrators, you know, through our work with Jenny and I's work with a consultant, really helping educators dig into particularly the English curriculum and understand what it looks like.
Yeah.
Are the curriculum, again, we talked about teaching being complex. One of the reasons it's complex is because the resources you have offer you so many things. And so it's not like, here's a book, you open up to page 36, you read from it, and that's your lesson for the day. It's not that at all. In fact, there's a number of decisions the educator has to make about, you know, the passage and how to do this and what resources to bring in and how to approach, and really helping administrators help teachers do that has been really, really fun and challenging and eye-opening for me, you know, because now I'm seeing it from a wider lens as opposed to high school that I was used to.
Right. And I think the strength in Pittsfield is that all of the schools are using the same high quality instructional materials, so that if you're a student at Conti and you move across town to Egremont, right, you'll be in the same instruction that you're receiving at Conti is the same as at Egremont.
Past war story, at ninth junior high, junior high, North junior high, in ninth grade, we learned we had Algebra 1. Well, algebra is hard enough, I think. We learned it from Mr. Lyons, God rest his soul, great guy, great teacher. We get to PHS, they're still teaching the old algebra. So when you tell me that, brings back wonderful, but sad memories, but what you've corrected that now, so you can go district-wide, and that English in the third grade is the same as the English in another school. And I think that's a coordination that you guys should take a lot of credit for. I mean that. I don't think it's everywhere anymore. I think it's hit and miss kind of situation with some. I have to tell you the story and we'll move on. I'm on the main yard and this kid comes up. He's a good kid. He wasn't a good kid. He was in a penitentiary at 17. So, but he, I said, so, and as I told you, we gain points. They do something right, they get points. So he comes up and I said, so how's it going? He goes, well, I said, what? What's the matter? He goes, oh, I was doing really good in school. I said, well, what happened? He said, I don't know. I was working with the numbers. And then we start today. They put letters in with the numbers. And that he was in a tailspin there. You know what I mean? But I think what you guys are attempting to do is the right thing, but I don't think it's an easy thing, you know. And how can we help you, parents, grandparents, you know, citizens, what kind of support can we give the schools? Because what I believe is it does take a village. And everybody in the village has got to be focused on education for kids. I mean, and then we got other things we can look at. Trash pickup, that's a big deal. They put more time in the trash pickup than when we put into educating the kids. But what can they do? What can people do to become more active and more supportive?
Oh, that's a lot. Well, one thing. So I think there's things for people who have students in the school, and then there's for the community. And I think it's two separate sort of approach.
Yes. Yeah.
Like one thing for families who have children in the schools, I know each school has a number of opportunities to become involved. And particularly with school councils, there's something we're doing new this year. I just want to take a second to highlight that the superintendent is, you know, we don't have a good name for it yet, But the superintendent is holding what's called basically superintendent councils, in which he's trying to get representation from all the schools.
Cool.
And our multi-language learner families and our special ed families. And he wants to meet with representatives of them, of those councils, monthly. And then twice a year, we're having what we, again, for lack of a better term, summits, in which we ask all interested families from schools and groups to come and meet with the superintendent and ourselves and talk about pertinent issues, right? So we're trying to really get people's voice. We give surveying, and, you know, so participating in that, I think, is really, we do use that information to try to drive what we do. You know, and again, I think that's, you
know. No, I think that's important because you're reaching out for feedback that you can evaluate, bring in, you know, as they say in Washington, make the sausage from it, you know, and again, I don't want to beat this horse to death, but it isn't your father's school. I mean, I had the good fortune, and I mean, I learned a lot from going into the Taconic, the old Taconic, every morning down to the radio cubbyhole station. And the one thing is, I've told this story 100 times. There's two ladies, young kids, young women, one on this side, one on this the aisle headed towards this radio station. And every morning they'd be on one side and they'd be texting. So I finally had to fight. I said, who are you texting? Every morning when I walk by, you're texting. Who are you texting? And she went, her. Right across the hall, the aisle. But that showed me again, and I've just finished reading that book. I'm sure you guys have heard of it, Anxious Generation. And boy, I'll tell you, in my opinion, a lot of it he nails. But I would say this, and then you guys... One of the things that I hold near and dear to my heart is what a convict said to me once, or an inmate, said to me, I want to thank you for listening to me. You didn't interrupt me. You know, you just listened. You're the first person that's just listened to me. And I thought, I try to internalize that when I'm dealing with people. Listen to what they're actually saying. Because we're all busy. You know? But, and the schools, Jen, if you go down the schools again for me, please, that you're working in.
Taconic, Herberg, Reed, Morningside, Conti, and Crosby.
So these are all schools that I'm kind of familiar with. Reed, I'm very familiar with, and PHS, but they're not. What happened? How did they get out of? Do you know? I mean, if you're doing your analysis, what do you think got them to this state?
I think it you know, it's a multiple things. I mean, if you notice, all the schools that we're talking about are in our most needed.
Districts.
That's part of the issue. It's also, I think you can't blame everything on COVID, but it's some of that. And then it's the expectations that I talked about earlier, that we really need to hold high expectations for all of our students, no matter where they're coming from or what they're coming into our schools with.
And I have to say this, Laura Macklin, I interviewed her, and she's the ELL coordinator. I sat there, Dr. Phil's word, stupefied. I mean, the variety of different nationalities, and it's not just language. I think people forget it's customs. Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, I was fortunate. I traveled all over the world. And I can remember one in particular was South Africa, the customs of the people there and the foods, all kinds of things that I don't think get the educators get enough credit to understand. They have to understand it. And I was totally blown away by her interview. She was great.
Yeah.
What,
We are lucky to have her.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Oh, for sure. Now, as I said, and I guess I'm a bugaboo for this, because what measurements, specific measurements to show progress? Because you're, maybe I'm wrong, but working with, could be incremental in you know, the society, they want overnight change. That's not, as I said before, there are no silver bullets. So for the, how would you judge, how are you going to judge incrementally, student by student?
Yeah, we're looking at all different data points. We're a very data driven district. So we do benchmarks, which measure students' reading and math levels. We do those 3 times a year. So we're looking at those and digging down into different groups.
Yeah.
To see if there's growth there. So we're looking at those measures. As a district, we're going to schools every week and going into classrooms to see if we're seeing evidence of that deep, durable learning. So that happens every week from a district perspective. And then we look at regular assessments, the assessments that come from those instructional materials and how students are doing with those. Attendance, suspension data, student voice data. So we survey students twice a year. And to get their perspective of what's working.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So we have a ton of data that we examine and look at on a regular basis. So we don't just wait until that end of the year MCAS test.
That's kind of where I was going. Through the year, you're peeking in all the time. And I think for the viewing and listening public, that should give you a sense of relief, but also a sense of encouragement that we have people who know what to, looking at the facts. I know I get stuck up on that word, but again, some of it we own, not them. Their job is to provide education and role models and all that. And I can say this from going through the old Taconic. Boy, some of the kids, they were like magnets to the teachers. And you know, I applaud all this doing. So I'm not going to ask this. I was going to say, when do you think you'll get, but that's an unfair question because you're really still kind of digging down into the nitty gritty of it. Is that fair to say that there's a lot of moving parts for why a kid doesn't come to school or whatever?
I'm very optimistic that we'll get number of schools out of status this end by the end of this year. And then the goal is to get the rest out by 3 years. But I'm very optimistic that we'll have some out this year.
Again, I repeat myself, anything that I can do notification wise, meeting wise, get it to me and I'll start announcing, put it on the Facebook. Cause I want to get more community involvement at the knowledge level. If that makes any sense to you, I want the community to be as knowledgeable about what's going on as they can be. And I think that will knock off some of the sniping.
Yeah.
And just to circle back to your MCAS question earlier, about question two, an interesting nuance to this in, you know, whether how you feel about it or not. Part of what we have to, for the high schools, I'm talking specifically for the high schools, the large part of how they're assessed and graded by the state is MCAS, participation, growth that Jenny alluded to earlier, and achievement. And now in the high school, the big question remains is if this doesn't count, and what will the students' attitude be towards this test? How serious will they take it? Will they take it? And then the flip side is then if the high schools are still judged primarily by MCAS assessment scores, what is that going to do? And I think that's a concern.
Yeah.
High schools across the Commonwealth yesterday morning, where is like, so how is this going to affect our accountability when this new wrinkle is put into this. So like there was a lot riding on that question, a lot of implications. And I think, you know, in the next few months, as the Department of Education tries to figure out how this all impacts us, I think it's going to be an interesting time. And it'll certainly be something we have to pay very close attention to, you know, working in a school district.
I worked for an old boss one time who said, we can fix it now with your suggestion, but I want you to go back and come back tomorrow and tell me, what will that look like a year from now? Because as we know, change, like we just found out, what you just said is very important. Excuse me, is very important. I don't think that was figured in the question at all. Reading those questions, they have real politicians writing those, trust me, because they don't make any sense. But seriously, question five, the people who are working at industry worked hard against it. Vote no, because the people who promoted it thought it would be helping them. So I guess, Matt, you were saying the same thing. Yes, there was some positive stuff about MCAS, but do we think long range, and what will the kids still take it even?
Well, I think anytime we have change is exciting and there's opportunity, right? And so I think if we keep a mindset open and we have honest talk about like, what does this mean? It's just something that we're having to now try to navigate with a lot of unknowns. And when our high schools are judged on a formula that relies heavily on something that now isn't a requirement. It's just a really interesting question and fascinating sort of approach. Like, how is this going to affect us? And only time will tell on that.
Well, I will say this. I don't envy either of you, but I am here to always support you. And I think the greatest experience I had was in the Youthful Offender Program and the importance of education. And you brought it out earlier in the thing, and I'm shouting out to the public with this. Matt, I'm going to ask Dr. Bishop one more time to go over chronic absenteeism and what that means, because people think, well, I missed a couple of days, but every day you miss, I have a formula upstairs as I was preparing for this. That shows if you miss so many days, instructional hours and all this. Would you just go over it again, Matt? I don't want to catch you flat-footed, but...
No, it's fine. So 10%. So we have 180 students have 180 school days. 10% is 18 days. So anything over 10%, which is 19 or more. And that, you know, when you might say, oh, geez, 19 days, that's a lot. And it is.
Yeah.
At it like that's 2 days a month. That's 2 days a month for school. And then people go, whoa, wait a minute, right? Like that doesn't sound like a lot when you say two a month, but it adds up. And like you said, like we have a number of our students who are chronically absent. And when you miss that much schooling, and I'm not saying, like, I just want to be clear, like, I understand there are times that things happen and people
right.
have
to, absolutely
not trying to sound like I don't understand that. I mean, my own children miss school from time to time, but when you miss 19 or more days, 2 days a month, there is a lot of learning that is lost, and it's hard to catch up. And we have a number of students in our district who miss that many days or more.
Jen, before we go, one last time, are we still catching up from COVID?
I think that we are. I think that we are.
We are too.
I mean, learning online.
No. The boy, it was a president. I told him, I'll call him back. I really believe that was a really a real bump in the road. And I think it's going to take more than a year or two to catch up. That's just me, and I don't know a lot about education. I know you guys are digging in hard and charging, but boy, you lose that. But now on the other side of that, I was talking with Jen's replacement, Stephanie. I have someone in our family who's autistic and had the best school year ever on screen. On screen. And now, but for some reason now, he's back into school and really doing well. But maybe it was that maturing piece or whatever. But they, I mean, he loved school when it was on the screen. Now, we don't still have the video, or not video, what do they call it, virtual school?
No, we don't have that. There are virtual schools in the Commonwealth, but not in, not run by Pittsfield Public Schools.
I applaud you both. I really do. I applaud you, and I thank you for a lot of people out here who really do try to understand what y'all are going through. And I hope that these programs help the citizens of Pittsfield understand that nobody's throwing their tax dollars away or whatever, but challenging times exist right now in the education, in the world, in society. And I would just say, before you criticize, get the facts. And you can see these people, they have the facts. Trust me. And I've said this 1,000 times on the radio. What I like about our Pittsfield school department, it goes back to Dr. Jake Eberwein. They don't just knee jerk something. They come to you, and we're seeing it right here, right now. They're coming to you with data and facts that they have researched. This isn't just pie in the sky stuff. Let's give them credit for that. Really and truly. I mean that. Hey, I know you guys are busy, so I would love to thank you so much for coming on. I hope this has opened at least a little bit of the door to all that you guys are trying to do. And as I said, I'm always here to help. And, I should have. Matt, how many shops at Taconic now?
14 going on 15.
So there you go. We are preparing people for the trades, for college, for doctors, lawyers, whatever. The Taconic trades are unbelievable. And I know one, I just got to do this. I got to take a. I'm so happy to hear about the broadcasting program. Because when I first, with Dr. McCandless, did a kind of a draft curriculum for that, Desi, or whatever, said there's no place in the new building for any radio stations. Well, that's a whole career field today that's, you guys are doing a great job with it. I don't know where you found Jamie, but he's worth my weight in gold.
Yeah, we were lucky to get him.
Very good. I don't want you to take this as a threat, Matt. I'll be out there next Wednesday morning.
Awesome.
All right. Just don't have the police officer waiting for me again. It was a little embarrassing. I know this also drives some of you crazy, but I have to do it. God bless. And today, rather than criticize, congratulate. Lift somebody's load for them. Smile. Give them a call. Let them go ahead of you. It will make you feel better. You see, we're all in this together. And each other, that's all that we have. They're trying to bring up the next generation to replace us. It's not as easy as when we came up. So cut them some slack. Try to understand their issues. Thank you, folks. Thank you so very much. And like I said, Matt, I'll be there next Wednesday.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Bill.
You're the best. Thanks. Jen, same thing if you need anything.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Take care, guys.
Bye. Bye, Bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.